And welcome back to The Edge. On today's show, we're talking about entrepreneurship with Pitch Feast, as well as gender equality in the workplace with Pivot Point. All the P's on this presentation and much more. You don't want to miss these great guests. Let's do it today on The Edge.
Your audio and video source featuring Indianapolis tech trends, marketing industry champions, and business innovation. This is Edge of Indy, broadcasting from Edge Media Studios. Let's get today's conversation started.
And I forgot, you know, it's also Paul Poteet. So we've got
the P trifecta.
We do. It's amazing. All the P's and much more. Hey, welcome back to Edge of Indy. If you haven't seen the show before, thanks for joining us. We are continually doing our live broadcast here at 3 p.m. Wednesday Eastern each and every week, showcasing Indianapolis's trending entrepreneurs, movers and shakers, organizations that we want to lift up and showcase and let people know that these groups are really caring about the Indianapolis area. We focus on companies and nonprofit organizations that are making Indianapolis a great place to work, live, and visit. So we always ask you to choose local and choose local often. That's what Edge of Indy is all about. I would like to introduce to you our guest. Actually, first and foremost, who I am. I'm Aaron Sparks. I'm the CEO of Site Strategics, as well as Edge Media Studios. And to my right, I have Brittany Simpson, who is the onboarding and outreach manager of Site Strategics. Are you a manager or a specialist?
Manager.
You're a manager? You sure? But are you special?
Are you downgrading
me? Well, is specialist up or down from manager?
It's up.
Is it? Okay. Well, all right. Very good. Over there is Kendria Williams, CEO of Pitch Feast. How are we doing?
Wonderful. Thank you.
You're more than welcome. More than welcome. Well, thanks for joining us today. What is a manager below or above specialist?
Below a specialist.
All right.
You think?
Yeah. I think so. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Managers kind of manage people.
Yeah.
The specialist owns the talent.
Oh, look at that.
And you feel that I should.
Oh, absolutely.
Thank you.
Absolutely. She's a specialist.
Speaking of specialists, we hear that you're up to some pretty special things in the city. See how I did that?
Very good. Absolutely. Very good play on words.
Transition.
I like it.
So you want to tell us a little bit about Pitch Feast?
All right. So Pitch Feast is a nonprofit organization. We consider ourselves a community crowdfunding event. And so we host dinners at local spaces. Mm-hmm. We invite people to come out and have dinner. And on the flip side, they get to hear the ideas of entrepreneurs who are pitching in Pitch Feast. The pitchers get to pitch. The audience chooses who had the best pitch. And then that individual gets 75% of what we collected at the door that night, in addition to some business services to help get him or her through their first year.
Oh, that is fantastic.
Absolutely.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah, that's a cool program for sure.
Thank you.
Your focus is really around supporting micro enterprise and under-resourced entrepreneurs. So mm-hmm. you're big on helping the little guy, right?
Absolutely.
Tell us about that.
I am big on just looking at the non-traditional businesses. So these are businesses that are kind of heavily skilled. Mm-hmm. So it might be your local landscaper, your bakery, clothing designer, you know, just somebody mm-hmm. who has a non-traditional business and really has very low resources to get started. Mm-hmm. So we really focus on helping those groups kind of not only move from being a sole proprietor to an LLC or a corporation, but we really want them to kind of participate in the business environment in Indianapolis. And so just being having their structure set up correctly, having the appropriate, team members mm-hmm. and whatnot. So, you know, we really do focus on the underdog, helping them get the resources they need so they can kind of keep going past that first year.
So part of your environment is also introducing those organizations to other resources, other individuals, other companies that are wanting to give back and provide that type of bootstrapping that, mm-hmm. That organizations or some companies need. And I hear this over and over. That's resonating inside of Indianapolis. There's so many groups. I should say so many. I'm hearing about groups like this that are mm-hmm. really wanting to mentor new companies mm-hmm. and help get things straight. Where, I mean, the entrepreneur that's passionate about what they do, it may be making cakes, it may be landscaping, but they don't know the spectrum of things that they got to pay attention to run a business, right? Mm-hmm. Let alone accounting.
Absolutely. Or even getting a loan for that business.
Right.
You know, that business may not be viewed as something that is a high growth entity. Mm-hmm. And so the banks are probably not going to want to give loans on that type of business.
Right.
So for the most part, it is a lot of seed funding and bootstrapping mm-hmm. that happens with small businesses like micro enterprises.
Oh, that is very cool. Very cool. Define. I want to get around this micro enterprise concept mm-hmm. and share with our audience what that really means.
Micro enterprises are just probably one or two man operations. They may not have a desire to grow. They might just like having their little cake shop with their family working in it.
Sure.
And they're not looking to get another location. They may be okay with making under $100,000 a year. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really...
so it could be like a side hustle kind of thing.
It's kind of like a side hustle, but then again, it's kind of, it's an income for them. Mm-hmm. So they're not looking to be a business owner. They're just looking to find income.
Sure.
So micro enterprises, you normally find them as one or two man operations, mm-hmm. and they may be operating as a sole proprietor.
Oh, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, that fits right into the entrepreneurial fabric of Indianapolis. And I hearken back to Launch Fishers mm-hmm. and the Launch community, the Tech Point community. They're wanting to give back regularly and foster and I keep on using bootstrap, but you're absolutely right, giving resources where they're needed. Can you expand on why this is such a rich resource for entrepreneurs in Indy, your insight into this?
Interesting enough, so when we first started Pitch Feast, of course, we don't give thousands of dollars at mm-hmm. Pitch Feast. We give a couple $100, and it's just enough to encourage them to take the next step. But our first couple years of doing Pitch Feast, we realized that a lot of that money was just going to file their LLC
right.
with the Secretary of State. Mm-hmm. And so in that aspect, we were helping the business community in terms of legitimizing those businesses. And they needed to be legitimized mm-hmm. because in Indiana, you can't get a bank account for a business if you're not an LLC, right?
Oh, I don't think I knew that.
Yes. So you have to be an LLC.
Minimum of an LLC, right?
Well, you have to have some type of filed registration.
Yep.
You can't be a sole proprietor.
Right.
You can have a business name, but you can't cash a check in that business name if you're not filed with the city or the state. Hmm. So it's just little things like that that could really deter somebody out of the process, you know what I mean? And so we wanted to try to fill that gap where, okay, something as small as you're not filed with the state, let's help you get filed with the state, and now you can go get a business, and now you can bring in checks, people can write you checks, people see that you are legitimate. You know, so it's those little gaps that we were trying to fill to help people go to the next level.
Good. I love it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Something we've been focusing on a lot as we have entrepreneurs on the show and small companies. What do you think it is about the Indianapolis community that is seeming to spur all this new innovation and all these new businesses? And what about Indianapolis do you think is really bringing that to the forefront?
Sure. So for one, we are accessible to four different states in mm-hmm. like a 4-hour period.
Yep.
That's a plus. It is very inexpensive to start a business here. And so, like, if you go to Illinois, go across the line, you're looking at about a $600 Ooh. Registration fee opposed to $90 here.
Hmm.
So the fact that it does not cost a lot of money to start a business here is very
attractive. Yeah.
And it reduces the barrier of entry because now more people can pay $90 opposed to having to pay $600.
Huh, that's amazing.
Mm-hmm. So we have a really good, I have to say that our licensing fees, they're very affordable for people who are trying to start a business.
And on top of that, just operationally, you just don't see not only the license of the startup, but there's just not a substantial amount to keep things going. I mean, at the same time, you have to have your regular resources and accounting and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very supportive of mm-hmm. of fostering new business, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, the one thing, so we know that there are just certain areas that businesses need help in. If they don't have help in those areas, they're going to fail.
Mm-hmm.
And so the good thing is in Indianapolis, you can see the groups that are popping up. they are trying to address those areas. So you might have a group of attorneys that are working with small businesses with their structure. You might have a digital marketing agency such as this that brings in pitch fees who has very low resources and couldn't afford this, right?
Exactly.
you have like business ownership initiative and startup ladies who are connecting, you know, women who are trying to start their business with high impact mentors. So it seems like the groups that are here, they are all focusing on an area of development that a business needs. And so I enjoy it. I appreciate that.
Now, you hold, you host workshops. Your workshops are another opportunity for entrepreneurs to actually get engaged with one another and with the resources that you represent. Can you tell us a little bit about those workshops as well?
So right now, one of the workshops we offer is just a how to pitch workshop. And we just go in, you know, and talk to them about, we actually use the business model canvas and kind of go over those nine functions of the business model canvas.
You like that one, huh?
I do.
That's the cool one. You know, and it's just trying to get them to think about when they're putting their business together, the valuable things they need to focus on. You know what I'm saying? So who are your key partners? What is your value proposition? Longer the days of writing a big 30-page business plan. So we kind of focus on helping individuals not only pitch that idea, but structure it to where it's understandable to them and the person they're pitching it to.
Kind of like an elevator pitches, sort of?
Pretty much.
Okay, that's awesome. That's so important.
But the business model, it gets into an education for that business on the operational needs in a life cycle concept of a business. And so many, writing business plans, that entrepreneur gets so removed from the practical and the pragmatic things that you need to actually engage on. And that's why that model is so effective, because it kind of breaks those barriers of understanding.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. Absolutely. I love it. Well, how about you give a shout out to some of your partners at Pitch Feast?
Well, let me give a shout out definitely to the Speakeasy. They were just tremendous supporters for us since we began. Jeremy at Nameless Catering, like, every time I see him, I have to give him a hug because he provides our food.
He is all over the place.
I know. It is crazy.
Let me tell you. It's like he's taking over the city.
He is like literally taking over Launch Nameless, right? There's Launch Fishers, Launch Indian, and Launch Nameless. but the interesting thing, so Jeremy, he's somebody who is, you know, watching him is inspirational because he was another entrepreneur and started off with very low resources and was able to grow that business through relationships and then service to others. So, I mean, he's another model of under-resourced entrepreneur or business who was able to grow, not because he had the financial resources, but he was able to connect with the community and grow that way. So, yeah. So, Nameless Catering, I love you, and I hope to have you for 2018. Wink, wink.
Do it, Jeremy.
I mean, the tip of the hat to Nameless, they give away so much.
Absolutely.
Well, and they're all over the all over the place.
Absolutely.
But, I mean, whenever there's an event that is a get-together event, they're not looking for that catering fee.
Yeah.
On a regular basis. I mean, not saying that you're giving away stuff, Jeremy. That's not the point. But the point is that you're giving back and you're helping where there's groups of individuals and you're food and bacon.
Freudian slip.
Hi there.
Bacon.
But breaking bread is part of that social fabric.
Yep.
And be able to have that. And be able to support these type of meetups. And he's plugged in. He really is.
He is. So I have to say thank you to him, Launch Fishers, John out there. He has offered a space there. Mike Head, he was an attorney here. Very good at helping the business kind of make sure that they're structured right. One more. I'm sorry. Jason with Centric of Indiana. Or Centric
Indy. We love Jason.
We love Jawbrain. That's what I call him. Jawbrain. That's his email.
Shout out Jason Williams.
Great guy. Been a supporter since day one. So, yeah, I could not have done like 10% of what I've done without the support I have. You know, because once Pitch Feast is over, then it's the other partners that come in and kind of rally around the entrepreneur. And so if it wasn't for the partners, Pitch Feast would not be what it is now.
Speaking of bacon, Go with me. Right. You're in. I know you're in.
I'm already there.
Can you tell us about Kevin Bacon and his association with this organization?
How cool that was.
Because it's pretty cool.
I know, right? And you know what? This year, I actually was like, I need to push this on my social media. Like,
yes,
I need to let people know that I was with Kevin Bacon. But it was so interesting, and it really speaks to the power of social media. I was at a conference, and I was at a social media conference, and there was a speaker, and she was talking about this organization that if you tweet to them, they'll give you some either publicity or they may have a celebrity come to your event, right? As skeptical as I was, I tweeted during this conference, like, hey, have you heard about Pitch Fees? And I sent a video. Of course, he hadn't heard about Pitch Fees. Why would he know about Pitch Fees, right? But about 10 minutes later, I got a direct message from one of his people. And it was like, wow, this looks really cool. Tell us more. And I was like, okay. So it ended up he was going to be here in August because he was performing with the Bacon Brothers Band at the State Fairground.
Okay.
And so I was not having a Pitch Fees event for him to come to. So I was like, oh, I'm so sorry. I don't have an event planned. But then I just kind of kicked him out like, but listen, we got Speakeasy here. We have these. And I started counting all these groups. I was like, surely you can meet with somebody. And so they was like, okay, well, you know what? We'll just do breakfast at the Speakeasy, and we'll bring him in, and he'll meet the entrepreneurs and whatnot. I'm like, okay, cool, right?
Yes.
So he comes in, and, you know, he speaks to everybody.
Did he dance?
No, he didn't.
Oh,
dang.
He did not dance.
Can we bring him back, and he'll dance?
Right? Get that dance on him. Did that Footloose going?
Yeah, he's done so many other things besides that movie.
Well, I tell you,
nothing is good though.
He kind of just threw me off because I thought he was just coming to visit, and he was just like, you know, when I talk to you guys, you know, you're really passionate about pushing what everybody else was doing, and so how can I not contribute, you know, a little something? And so he gave me a little love offering.
Oh, my
gosh.
And
I was able to get my banners and tablecloths, so things I reuse. Sure. Every time I pull it out, you know, I can say, Kevin Bacon bought this.
Kevin Bacon bought this for me.
I know. But, I mean, it was just an amazing experience. I mean, it did not hit me until later on. Like, this dude is a Golden Globe winner.
Mm-hmm. Is he as lovely as he seems like he is?
He is. And in Stir of Echoes, that's one of my favorite
there
movies.
There it is. Yeah, see, right? Much better movie than Footloose.
No.
However, but when he came in, he was so small. I was like,
small?
Yes. You're thinking this big personality? I mean, he was just a small, casual dress.
How small?
Small as you.
Right about
not as small.
He might be my height a little bit taller. You know, you like I said, when you think of a big personality and then this little humble person comes in the room.
This little humble person.
Oh, my God. That's Kevin Bacon. So, yeah, that's something I'm going to carry that for a minute.
Good for you. Thanks, Kevin Bacon.
I know. Thank you, Kevin. Give a shout out to Kevin Bacon.
Yeah, I'll tweet him after this, too.
What is it? 3 or 6 degrees organization. That's what they call it, the 6 degrees.
Oh, very cool.
I'll
very
tweet
cool.
Them. And ask them to bring us bacon. Maybe he can come and bring bacon.
Oh. It's like a baconception right there.
And then do the Footloose dance.
Boom. You know what?
Producer says we're one degree closer.
I actually start telling people now that Pitch Fees is like the Kevin Bacon in Indianapolis because so many people have either come to Pitch Fees, pitched the Pitch Fees, or heard of Pitch Fees.
I love it.
You know, so
I love it.
So, the partner shout out was fantastic. Can you give us some insight into some of the pitches that you've heard in the Pitch Feasts?
Oh, wow. We've had a lot of different pitches. So our platform is open. We don't necessarily say you have to be a certain type of company.
Uh-huh.
So we've done nonprofit, for-profit, and even some social projects. And so one social project that I can just, you know, be proud of is it was the Rivoli Park Project. Mm-hmm. Over in this community on the Far East Side, there was a underpass that had all this graffiti, and it was just neighborhood blight. And so the community got together, and they wanted an artist to come in and paint a mural over the graffiti. And so they came and pitched in Pitch Fees. They ended up winning $600, so they got enough money to get the paint.
Then
the artist donated his time. He painted over the mural, and it's still there today. And they pitched 4 years ago. So that, to me, was like, yeah. You know, we knew it wasn't going to be a business. We knew it wasn't, you know, going to add economic development, but that neighborhood was so passionate about getting that blight taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
So the Rivoli Street Project was one. We've had Project Purse pitch and win. More recently, we had, it says No More Shitty Teas, but I know it's called something else.
And I just, well, I love it just for the namesake.
Well, they just had a big write-up in them about them in the Indy Star yesterday. So yeah, I mean,
no more shitty teas.
Yeah, no more shitty.
I'm gonna look that up.
No, right?
Should we all say that?
It's a really cool concept because she makes these really cool. She makes these really cool shirts for women in corporate America, basically because you know.
Oh, that aren't collared shirts.
There you go.
I saw that.
See,
and I agree. No more shitty teas. Polo shirts.
If we say it four more times.
I agree, though. Women don't probably sometimes want to wear polo shirts. When's the last time you did, by choice?
Right. I don't even think I have a polo shirt, to be honest.
I don't either. And I didn't like them when I had to wear them in seventh grade either. So.
Yeah. So.
No more shitty.
Yeah, we've had a lot of different people just kind of pitch fees. And
I love it.
Win or lose, they pitched. So.
So, as a result, and with the partners that are supporting them after the event, what kind of success stories do you hear from? Rivoli is a fantastic success story. How have some of these pitches and these entrepreneurs really benefited long term from the pitch and the partner relationships?
Nice. So about 87% pitchers. I want to say 90 or 93, but I have to go look at my spreadsheet. But I'll say 87 as a safe number.
Sure.
They're all still operating. They're all still in business. There's one organization, Speak Your Story. They are a website platform that's just trying to change the voice of women around the city. And so they've grown that platform pretty big. Just had a lot of women join, have had a lot of women include their voice and tell their story. So, yeah, I mean, it's just kind of amazing the work we do and the people we worked with, because like I said, they're so non-traditional. Mm-hmm. It's kind of on the outskirts of what people are really looking
for. But you know what? It's just not about big business pitches and Shark Tank mentality.
Exactly.
It's about using these tools and using the concept to be able to give back to the community in whatever degree, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. it's about bringing people along and say, you know what, you can do something. Here's some resources. Mm-hmm. Here's some mentoring, right? Mm-hmm. And here's some food.
And some food, right? And you know the good thing. excuse me. Am I done?
She's getting choked up. She's getting very emotional about this.
You made me lose my train of thought.
Yes. We do that a lot. I'm sorry.
But goodness, go ahead. Yeah.
Go ahead.
She's overclaimed.
What can we do to help you to advance this? What do you want Indianapolis to do? Because you've got an audience watching and listening.
I know, right?
So what can they do for you?
So for the most part, join us on Meetup at Pitch Feast. That's where we post a lot of our information. That's where we keep our events posted. 2018, we're moving up into the Northwest Indiana area. We've been invited to work with a group up there.
Can you believe it's 2018 already? Isn't it weird?
I know, right? Like it's almost over. So yeah, just excited about what we have happening in the future. Promotion, retweets, people coming to the event. Mm-hmm. The more people that come to Pitch Feast, the more seed money we can offer to that winner. So yeah, as much as you guys can come and join us, just come to a dinner, check it out. I think you'll enjoy it. It's a very casual atmosphere. The audience votes.
And Kevin Bacon could show up at any time.
Kevin Bacon might show up. Or at least you can see his tablecloth and his banner.
Branded by Bacon, right?
Purchased by Bacon.
Oh, there we go. There we go. You certainly want to track Pitch Feast on their Twitter, at Pitch Feast, on Facebook, Pitch Feast, pitchfeast.org, yes. As well as Pitch Feast Indy on Instagram. Great branding all around.
Thank you.
Check.
Strong.
Absolutely. So what can you, final thoughts, what can you give from a word of inspiration to entrepreneurs that want to not only be able to possibly be a beneficiary of a Pitch Feast, but also the organizations, the individuals that want to start up their own company? Because you're seeing a lot of individuals, and there's some certain guidelines that everybody needs to adhere to, right? Mm-hmm. So what kind of inspiration can you give a new entrepreneur that's really wanting to take the plunge?
I guess for the biggest thing for me is just identifying that problem you're trying to solve and, you know, making sure that there is a market there for it. With Pitch Feast, you know, the we identified a problem that minority businesses either didn't start or didn't stay around long because they just didn't have support in certain areas. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we figured. We create this platform and, you know, just let them pitch, help them get some resources, see that the community supports them, and maybe that'll be enough motivation to get them to keep going. So I just encourage you to make sure that you are, you know, you have a strong problem that you're trying to solve, and then just go for it. You know, it's going to be tough. I'm 5 years in on pitch fees, and I was about ready to throw in the towel a couple weeks ago, and I had a mentor that pimp smacked me right back into motivation. And I went home like, what was I thinking? Like he had a strong pimp hand.
I know I just met you today, but I kind of love you. I think you're wonderful.
I promise. So let me give a shout out to my mentor, John Qualls, because he pimp smacked me the other day. And I was like, yes, wow. I'm getting it back together.
Two pimp smacks this episode. And who knows what will happen later? We don't know.
Hey, shitty tees and pimp smacks.
Never underestimate the power of a pimp hand.
That's the tweetable for the day.
There it is.
There you go.
I love that so much.
Kendra, thank you so much. We certainly wish you all the luck in the world. And
thank you.
And if there's anything that we can do for you, anybody we can send your way with the different entrepreneurs and startup businesses that we talk to, we certainly will want to do that for
you
because you're doing a great service here for startup companies in Indiana.
You.
Well, you're more than welcome. More than welcome. Okay. That said, we are going to go to... We are not going to pimp
to
slap.
Pam. You're not going to the pimp pam.
Let's go see what our
I have to go now. Yeah.
You got to get out of here. Go take care of yourself. We'll talk to you later. Thanks so much. Now let's jump in and talk to Paul Poteet with a pimp slap. Go.
Real life. Real stories. Let's see what's trending in Indianapolis. This is Paul Poteet on The Edge.
Oh, no, wait a minute. What'd you do? Yeah, she ran off. She knew you were coming, and ran off.
Yeah, we are losing a lot of Brittany lately to sickness and in sickness and in health. We are losing her.
She's just bloody well avoiding you now. I wouldn't take inference from that at all.
A lot of times she ran out to get us something during this segment of The Edge this week.
Exactly. A cup of Starbucks and
I can't wait to hear what she's going to bring back any moment or at the end of this segment.
Maybe we can run a pool of, what will Brittany bring back after the segment?
Must be something really good if you had to go out for it. That's all I got to say.
Bacon.
Well, I certainly hope as we begin this segment of Paul Poteet on The Edge. I certainly hope that she did not go out to stick her head in cement. Did she do that? Do you know if she did that or not?
Funny thing, no, I actually don't think she mentioned that. However, you know, it's never beyond reproach. So what in the world are you talking about here?
I know this will surprise you, but this is guys that were involved in sticking their head in cement.
Yep, exactly.
And it's in England, and it was a post from the fire department there in West Midlands who said that five of our firefighters and a fire engine were tied up for an hour after they had to go rescue some would-be YouTube video makers.
Oh my gosh.
They were pouring like cement or something like cement around his head. And then I guess the idea was to use the microwave oven. We've got to use this microwave oven, custom kitchen delivery.
For the millennials out there, that's a Dire Straits reference.
It's an awesome song called Money for Nothing. But this guy, his head is somewhere as far as I'm concerned, but his head is also stuck in a microwave oven. He and a group of friends had mixed seven bags of something called phila or something.
Gosh.
They poured it around his head, which was protected by a plastic bag inside the microwave. He needs to be protected from his friends.
You've got to be kidding.
And so there you see the firefighters and a guy literally with a microwave oven sitting on his shoulders.
God.
It wasn't, I love the quote here, the oven was being used as a mold and wasn't plugged in. Oh, okay, well, now it's safe. It wasn't plugged in. The mixture quickly set hard, and by the time we were called, they'd already been trying to free him for an hour and a half. The guy could have died.
Absolutely.
They had managed to feed an air tube into the 22-year-old's mouth to help him breathe. And then they removed a large chunk of the polyphyla with a screwdriver, allowing him to breathe more easily. But they had to be extremely careful with the screwdriver because they were right there. It's Absolutely. His head. It's his head.
So they didn't check any of the curing. Well, I'm not even going to get into the weeds on the curing time of this. The sheer fact that he used a microwave for a mold and then put a quick cure concrete. I mean, literally, we need to send him a Darwin Award.
Well, you're talking about curing time. Aaron, there ain't no cure for this. Where's my bell?
Oh, my gosh.
There's not enough curing time in the world for this.
No, there's not.
Talk about literally a blockhead. This is your man, ladies and gentlemen. So I guess he's okay, but, you know, that was an hour out of the firefighters' lives.
They'll never get it. But I can only imagine that they're just laughing there. They're something off. My gosh.
So he's going to be okay, and you'll be happy. Before I even talk about this next one, too, I guess I should say this good boy is going to be okay. This doggy who managed to eat 21 pacifiers.
Wow.
And I know what you're thinking, Paul. Are you going to show us the pacifiers? Scroll down.
Oh, wait.
Well, okay, there's the x-ray.
Oh, my Lord.
See, I can see very much from that, but here's the after party, right?
Oh, my Lord.
21. Count them. 4, 8, 12, 16, 20, 20. Although,
yeah.
Although that one on the last full row on the left, that looks like maybe that's half.
Oh, my gosh. Look at this. It's like a.
They really like the green pacifiers, don't they?
Absolutely. And I mean, I love them all lined up in a row here.
The local couple recently had a baby. And sidebar here, this is a question Mrs. Poteet had. Why do you have 21 pacifiers?
Maybe you got to be prepared, right?
Yeah. I mean, that baby must be crying a lot. That's a lot of teething. That's a pacifier for every potential tooth that's coming in.
I think the pooch was making a political statement. And I mean, everywhere you look, it was a pacifier, and it was doing its community duty to get rid of them.
You never want to have a medical professional say this was the most fascinating and exciting surgery I have ever done. I never want to hear that, you know, as I'm counting backward from 100.
Oh, geez.
But that's what the vet said. The local couple, this is in Oklahoma, recently had a baby. Duh. And we're wondering what was happening to all the child's pacifiers. You should have known right then if you've got a wacky dog in the house. And then one day the child's grandmother saw the dog jump up on the counter and take off with one. The dog had slowed down her eating and had been vomiting a little for the last few days. Otherwise, the dog seemed fine. And then all of a sudden, it vomited up one of the pieces of evidence. And so they took it to the vet. So doggy's going to be okay. But my Lord, 21.
Oh, it's like a Pez dispenser. I mean, they keep popping out.
The world's worst Pez dispenser.
Oh, oh, I don't understand. I don't understand the count. How many of these things? I mean, literally, were they on every countertop in the house?
I'm trying to think of how many. Like, I think when we babysit here, I think my daughter-in-law Megan usually has, you know, maybe there's two that he has. I don't know, but
so there's backup after backup. But wouldn't you have actually noticed them missing at about 5?
Right.
No, evidently not, because you've got 21. They probably got many more than that.
Maybe they have 21 twin tuplets or whatever you would call 21 babies at once, and they're just really swamped. And that's why they have so many pacifiers, and that's why they didn't notice that they're all disappearing.
All I can think of is like Pac-Man just going through the house. I mean, I don't know.
And it connects directly to the dog's stomach. Oh my gosh, that the way they're all laid out there, that probably will stay with you. So I apologize for that image.
Oh, it's okay.
But doggy's all better now. Now, speaking of moms and babies, this mom with a recent newborn in Oklahoma, or in this is in Oregon. We'll go farther west for this story. This mom had recently had a an Amazon package stolen that she'd left out, or that she was getting from somebody, I guess, on her porch. And then, what's that term they have? I guess like porch pirates. That's She decided that she had a plan for retribution. And she's got a 4-month-old kid named Ben.
Okay.
And so she decided to tape up a box filled with 10 to 15 of Ben's diapers.
The precious moments.
After they had been used.
Yep.
Along with a note reading, as you see there, "Enjoy this, you thief." Wow. By Monday evening, she said, a couple of days later, the box was gone. How dirty were the diapers? The story, the reporter asked. Well, quote, "He's been sick the last week."
Oh, yeah.
"So we'll just leave it at that," she said. "It's pretty gross."
that is a very innovative and inspiring mom right there. And
yeah, the police spokesman, this was in Hillsboro, Oregon, says, you know, that's not the way that they would recommend, but still, you know, it worked and it probably felt really good too. So
wow,
if you've got porch pirates, make them walk the stank plank. That's what I say.
Can you imagine the expression on their face whenever they pop that open?
Open that up. And especially, you know, around here, maybe it's cold enough that, you know, the smell would be negated. But, you know, if it's mild and if it's just sitting there
cooking,
for a while.
Cooking in the back seat of their car. The smile is off of that Amazon package. That's for darn sure.
Yeah, exactly. Those thieves would be vomiting like they just swallowed 21 pacifiers.
Oh, I think there's the linkage. There it is.
Thank you. Check, please.
Wow, those are some edgy stories, Paul. Thank you so much. And nope, my gorge is not rising at all.
We'll see you on PaulPoteet.com, and that's what we have for you this week on The Edge.
All right, so with that, hey, give us an idea of what we have in store for us next week, weather-wise.
How was your hunting in the quiet of the light snow last Saturday?
Yeah, I didn't get out there, unfortunately. I wanted to now.
Well, I've got a couple of other, maybe a few, fat chance you can get away from the office on Wednesday afternoon, but...
Nope, ain't gonna happen.
As soon as we're done with this, there is some light snow blowing around, especially north and northeast of Indianapolis through this afternoon and this evening, and then we'll probably get a break on Thursday, and we have a slight chance for seeing a little more lighter snow on Friday. That's a little lower confidence forecast on Friday. Here's some exciting news. I know this may not be good for hunting, but on Saturday, it's good for Paul to get out there and do some running. I have gotten behind. December's an easy month to get behind. But Saturday, mid-40s, dry. We may have some rain showers. Sunday in the afternoon, they could mix in with some snow showers. Mm-hmm. There seems to be a trend where we might be a little milder the week leading up to Christmas. So I don't know about the white Christmas, but I do know that this afternoon, this evening, we definitely are seeing at least some accumulation, especially north and northeast of Indianapolis. Check with PaulPoteet.com for all the latest radar and the totals and such. So careful going out this afternoon, and then maybe again on Friday, and then maybe a little bit of a warm-up finally.
Oh, excellent, excellent. But I got to ask, can you see from this vantage point whether or not we're going to have a white Christmas? I know you've been asked. I know you've been asked.
Yeah, it's like it's white Christmas and race day forecast. Usually those are the big ones.
Right.
I don't know. It looks like we get a little warm up just in time. It does look like we may take another big dive like right after Christmas as far as temperatures. But it may be a little on the mild side just before Christmas. Not as mild as it was like 2 years ago. Remember?
Yeah,
the year 2015.
We had, it was like 60 degrees or something like that.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
That ain't going to happen. But we may be just mild enough and quiet enough that even after getting a couple of rounds of snow this month, we may not get the one, you know, the picture postcard one that everyone wants.
Yep.
That's life.
Yeah, you can always Photoshop it.
Yeah, exactly. If you don't like the weather, just leave me a package.
No snowballs in a crate in the front of it.
But leave it at one of the stations I used to work at. Care of Paul
Wow.
It's terrible.
It honestly is. You've just activated all of their minions. You realize that.
It's just a joke, people. Don't do that. Stay away from Meridian Street, please. Thank you.
Ooh. All right. With that, we don't endorse any bombing of.
I know. I see a lump of coal just about ready to drop down from the studio wall here. So that's just a joke, people.
Yeah, absolutely. We don't endorse any type of random diapering of media affiliates around the city.
Yeah, don't.
Shenanigans. Yeah. Yes.
There will be no shenanigans. No media shenanigans. Okay.
Our producer dropped the best word in the world. Shenanigans. No shenanigans.
I remember that restaurant. Remember there used to be a chain. Shenanigans, wasn't it? Oh no, that was Bennigan's. Never mind.
All right, got to cut this one off. Hey, Paul, thank you so much for the weird and edgy news, and especially a really nice forecast coming up. And we will see you next Wednesday.
One more time before Christmas.
Yes,
see
sir.
You then.
All right, take care, sir. Bye-bye.
This is Edge of Indy, showcasing Indianapolis tech trends, marketing industry champions, and business innovation. Broadcasting from Edge Media Studios. Now, let's get back to today's topic.
Well, we certainly understand that there's a huge tumult about discussions of gender equality in the workplace, and we wanted to bring a person of unique interest and someone who is communicating about this on a regular basis. We wanted to introduce to you Jenny Kratz.
Julie. It says Julie.
It says Jenny. You wrote Jenny. Julie Kratz.
It says Julie.
Founder and CEO of Pivot Point. Julie, how are you doing?
Excellent.
Do you
Excuse
answer?
Me, apparently I lose my voice when called Jenny.
You don't answer to Jenny at all?
Yeah. Doing wonderful. Thanks for having me.
More than welcome.
Do you have a sister named Jenny?
No.
That would be interesting.
I don't.
Not going to help me out there, are you? You could have. Right there, you could have. Yeah.
That's not why I'm here.
Well, tell us about your coaching business, Pivot Point, and what is it that you're up to around Indianapolis?
Yeah. So I started my own coaching business and speaking business about 3 years ago. I've always been very passionate about women and what will it take for women to be successful. We all know the statistics, unfortunately, haven't changed much around women in leadership roles and equal pay. And obviously, the political and social environment's one that's very interesting right now around this issue. A lot of people have asked me, like, did you know this was going to happen when you wrote a book about male allies?
Did you create this whole thing?
No, I did not have a crystal ball. I did not know this was going to happen. And, you know, it's really a great time of awakening. I think it's an opportunity for us to find a real path forward that's inclusive and supportive of women and men together.
So, I love that.
At the same time, not hypersensitive that you can't do your work either. I mean, you got to have this space where there's trust, there's equality, but you're all working together and moving ahead and not tripping over scenarios.
Oh, right? Yeah, absolutely. And having a safe place to share your story, to be empowered together. I think there's so many people with positive intent out there that want to help.
Yeah.
They're just not sure how to. And it's kind of a scary time when there's a lot of fear. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So having an open, engaging dialogue around these key issues is something I'm really passionate about.
Excellent. Can you tell us a little bit about what you consider is the pivot point and then kind of what you do to coach women through that time period?
Yeah. So pivot point's really a time when a woman's asking what's next. And so if you think about your career, my career, a lot of men and women in our careers, we have these series of pivot points, and we don't kind of have the old school career where it was I'm 30 years at the same company, I do this, then I do this, and there's this corporate ladder that I'm climbing. You know, today's world, millennials are likely to have 4 jobs by the time they're 32. And so if you think about that and all the pivot points that happen and will continue to happen in our careers, pivot points really designed, our tools are designed to help women find what's next. So find your purpose, find your passion, align it with the skills and strengths you already have. Perhaps there's some opportunities to sharpen some of those skills or tailor your message and how you communicate your why and your purpose and your resume and all the stuff that goes with that. But finding a succinct way to share your story with others so that they want to help you. You can connect with purpose intentionally.
That's an awesome package of information.
Isn't she cool?
Yeah. Well, you also have a book. Let's talk about that.
Do you want to pass them out?
Yeah, so we can hold them up. These are your copies.
Cool. Thank you.
The press is here.
So the book is one, How Male Allies Support Women for Gender Equality. And that's a huge, that's a powerful title there. So tell us about what you've got going on
here. Yeah. So we really wrestled with this over the last year or so. I love to write. I love to, you know, engage in tools that I think are really going to help take us to the next level. And a year ago, I got extremely curious about what's a topic that's maybe not being talked about as much, or what's an area that's really game-changing for women. Because, again, we know about the problems, but not so much the solutions. And I started talking with these wonderful men, which was kind of strange.
Oh, that's nice.
And I'm talking about women's issues. I hate to even say that. Women, the challenges facing women in the workplace. And these amazing men were just, like, coming out of the woodwork. Like, I want to talk about that. I want to talk about that. You know, I have a daughter. I have a wife. I had a single mother. I have had an experience with a powerful woman at work. I have all these great sources of inspiration. I want to help, too. And I'm like, wait a second. I'm talking to a lot of dudes recently about women.
That is really weird.
Yeah,
like,
it was weird.
All at once? That's very odd.
It was weird. And then I have this wonderful male ally at home as well. So my husband, Rustin, shout out to him. He is a stay-at-home dad. He wrestles with a lot of issues, too. And, you know, unfortunately, our society isn't as welcoming about that, too. And so him and I are having a few glasses of wine one night, and we're talking about men supporting women. I'm talking, telling him, sharing for the first time, really articulating this book idea. And I wanted to call men that support women, man champions.
Oh, I like that. And he vetoed it, probably.
And he looks at me and he's like, that is a terrible idea. Please don't do that. And I drank the rest of my glass of wine and I soaked in the feedback.
And you talked yourself out of it.
I'm like, yeah, maybe I should consider a different direction. And as I certainly as I shared that with other men, they kind of frowned and were like, no.
Thoughts? Oh. Man? Nope.
Man champion?
Nope. No, I don't think so.
Okay,
we got to know. No. We have a resounding no.
No. And that was what our poll shared as well. Yeah. A big goose egg on that one. So we toyed around with different titles, different ideas, and he actually was the inspiration for one. My husband said, it's one. It's us in it together. Mm-hmm. And I didn't fully understand what that meant early in the research, but as I engaged with experts on this topic around the country in a variety of roles and women that had engaged male allies, male ally came out very strong as a term that men, although they still prefer not to be called anything at all. They just want to be, hey, I'm just supporting humans.
Right.
Which is great. I wish there were more of that kind of behavior. But as they talk to women, they're like, not so much. Not all dudes are male allies, right?
Oh, yeah.
We got to call them something.
Yeah, they need a title.
So the term ally, the reason I really like it is because it signals this side by side, that we're in it together. I'm not here to rescue you as a man. I'm not going to treat you like my daughter.
Yeah, and that's where I was going with the champion thing, is that it's almost like you're
ownership or something.
You're protecting and getting in front of the woman. An ally is side by side.
Yep. Yeah, and you're in it together.
Right.
So I'm here to kind of coach you, support you. Maybe I play a little bit of a mentorship role.
Right.
I'm advocating for you. I'm sponsoring you, speaking up when you're not there on your behalf. But I'm not here to rescue you. I'm not going to, you know, support that behavior long term, because that's not what's going to help women. That's not going to enable, you know, successful change long term. It's not sustainable.
You know, if I could, it gives a what you're doing in this concept of male allies, it breaks open the old stereotype of the feminist movement without any want to have anything to do with males.
Yeah.
And right there, it's such a breakthrough moment, is that we're in it together.
Right.
Is that we should have each other's back, and it should not be adversarial. And the sheer fact that we should, you know, regardless of gender, we should be helping each other, right? But if there's support to be able to break down some stereotypes and some environments in corporate America where you could use some help from your counterpart that happens to be another gender, right?
Yeah.
That's where we should be, right?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, Aaron, because Yeah, the term, when I asked male allies if they considered themselves to be a feminist or supportive of feminism, there was kind of this like, I don't know about that. You know, I mean, it's unfortunate because this was part of the inspiration, too, when I went to the women's movement, the marches earlier this year. And this has kind of been the catalyst of this whole series of events we've seen happen and unfold until now. I remember seeing men around there and asking them if they thought of themselves as a feminist, too. And they're like, no, but I'm here supporting a women's march. So it's just interesting how much feminism was so polarizing. It was us versus them. It was just women. And it's kind of controversial even today for me to say that because I have women that I consider to be like in my tribe that are very supportive of this that are like, no, I'm a feminist. Like, we need to carry that torch as long as we can. But
that's interesting.
Don't know. I mean, I don't know. If,
but
like,
you,
I think
you can carry it to the point of. I tread lightly.
I know.
You can carry it to the point of fracturing a relationship.
Right.
You can carry it to the point of of using it as a cudgel. To separate as opposed to unify.
Yeah,
as a deadly weapon.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, it's divisive. I think we can all kind of agree the term is not inclusive of men.
Right.
It really had a time and a place, and it certainly has accomplished so much around awareness, around the challenges facing women, where I think feminism, and as a student of women's studies and reading lots of feminist pieces and calling myself a feminist and still do, but I don't think we mapped out a set of solutions very well with that. And it was kind of a zero-sum game that was pointed, like, if a woman gets at the table, a man must leave the table. And that's not really the message. The message around one is, no, in fact, the data shows when you get more women at the table, there's just more seats at the table because organizations are growing. There's more collaboration. There's better ideas. Better decisions are made. I mean, 80% of consumers in our country are women. And if you don't have them at the decision-making table in your organization.
Right. No, you're absolutely right.
You know, and McKinsey has data that shows 16% higher profitability associated with gender equality at the highest, you know, leadership levels in organizations. So there's just so many statistics that show when we get people together, the pie's bigger. It's not my slice is bigger than yours.
I don't want to give away all of the book, but I do want to touch on some of the actionable strategies you gave for the cross-gender partnership, because I think you have some very interesting perspectives on that.
Yeah.
So, for instance, I am a female. There are males on the other side of that wall. Mm-hmm. What can we do to, obviously, we approach things very differently.
And I have a female name, so.
Yeah, and it's even spelled the female, like I thought
the female
almost. Way. I know.
I'm bonding here. It's Irish, and we'll just leave it at that.
Okay.
Thank you.
I figured there was a backstory.
And he doesn't have a complex about it at all.
Boy named Sue. But, you know, hey.
So, actionable strategies.
Yes.
Can you tell us any of them?
Yes.
Please.
Yes. There are ways to take action on this. And you know, that's part of the feedback we've gotten overwhelmingly with one is that there's tools in each section of the book. So basically there's four key strategies. And we start with empathy. We talk about storytelling, speaking up together, and work and life and how they coexist for women and men together. So each section has something for male allies to do, something for women leaders to do. And so what you can do is like really partner up with your male ally as a woman and say, hey, let's work on this together. Let's kind of go through and map out what this relationship looks like. So it gives you tools to have a productive conversation, a productive mentorship, you know, relationship, just male allyship in general. So if I were to encourage people to take action on this, the ally workbook's available on our website. We can talk about that at the end and where to find that. But I would say as a male ally or somebody that wants to be more of a male ally, one of the easiest things to do is just ask a woman what it's like to be her. I mean, really? I mean, can you
We're not ready for that.
Can you imagine? What? So some of this requires a little bit of vulnerability, dudes. I get
and
it.
And some wine.
Yes, wine does help. But some of the male allies, they said, I just cared about what was going on. And I saw her, you know, whether it was struggle in a meeting or not being included in things or her voice was spoken over, all the things that tend to happen more to women than men generally. And I would just ask her, like, how does that feel? Like, what's that like? Like, I just genuinely want to know and just And that's the thing that male allies really do.
Listen.
Wow. They don't go into rescue mode. I want to solve all your problems right now.
See, we want to fix it.
Exactly.
Yeah,
it's just
fixers.
Like marriage,
yep.
right?
Exactly.
The same thing happens. Women are constantly saying, no, I just want you to listen. I don't want you to solve my problem. Same thing goes a lot for women in the workplace. We just need a coach. We need a sounding board. We need somebody to just bounce ideas off of and be there for us. And sometimes just be that voice when we can't be there, when we're not visible physically or not able to be there. Male allies' voices can amplify those of women.
I love it.
It's great, but boy, there's some tough conversations you're opening up the opportunity, right? But males as well as females need to be ready to not go everywhere in the conversation. It needs to be productive, and there needs to be a goal, right? Because it can get squirrely, right?
It does. It does. And I think being okay with that initially, letting some of that squirreliness happen.
Right.
But you're right. I think having some boundaries and some clear goals in mind with your conversation. So from a woman's perspective, one thing we argue is that you really need to start with what's in it for men. You know, articulate the benefits of male support and then narrow in on, hey, what role do I see you playing in that journey? You know, here's where I'm going. Here's how you could help. Would you want to be my mentor? You know, that's not an easy question to ask from a woman's perspective, too.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So to your point back to trust, being vulnerable with each other and building that trust early on in a relationship. I was at a women's luncheon today. And a woman came up to my booth and she shared, you know, I work for two men. I'm one of the only women on our team, you know, 20-person team, small business here in Indianapolis. And she said, but they're so cool. Like, they tell me if you ever feel like we're treating you like the only woman or doing things that are different because you're a woman, like, you got to call us out on that.
Yeah.
Call us out. And like, that's what good trust looks like, good vulnerability on their part. And she said, oh, don't worry, I will. And so that was really helpful because this week they had an event where the men weren't dressed. Something about their attire wasn't quite right. And she's very well known for being very well dressed. And so one of the partners came up to her and said, hey, we're not asking this because you're the woman, but because you know how to dress well.
Because you dress yourself better than we do. That's funny.
But because they'd had that conversation already.
Well, there was a level of awareness there. They knew to be aware. Yeah, that's good. That's very good.
She knew that they weren't coming at it from that place. And so having these intentional conversations and just saying,
that's really funny.
I want to support you. Please tell me if I'm not, because I sometimes don't know. And that's the thing. A lot of this is gender socialized from a very young age. We're wired, you know, as women to please others and, you know, to not take risks. And men are like, take charge and do what you need to do. You know, I didn't get that message when I was younger, not as much, right?
Did you get that message from a lumberjack?
No, but I did wear flannel.
Buckus was her father.
I was a fan of flannel.
So what are some of the commonalities you hear as a coach?
Yeah, the commonalities
amongst as you interact with and help coach this type of scenario where you've got the women looking for male allies, right? Mm-hmm. And what are some of the common questions that are asked in this space?
Yeah, so women that are looking for male allies, I think what they're curious about is who are those men that want to support her. And I think sometimes it's hard as women to ask for help, to extend our hand for something that we perceive to be selfish. Women historically.
Hold on. I just had an Oprah moment with that. That's very interesting.
Yeah. And we kind of compromise our own selves a lot for others, right? It's kind of the disease to please make everyone else happy around me, especially working mothers. I mean, this is the thing I hear often. Like, I don't have time for this stuff. Like, it's just, I got kids at home. I got a husband to take care of. I got a house to take care of. I do my 9-to-5, and I just want to kind of peace out. And I think it's really unfortunate to look at working mothers this way. I mean, there are more women than men graduate from college. We have amazing skills. And then all of a sudden, we kind of treat them like we just put them on a shelf when they have little people. And it's like, I don't understand this. Right. So how can we really demonstrate to these women like, no, we care. Our organization cares about you. We want you to have, you know, the career you want to have. And maybe that looks different when you have little people. That's totally fine. Zero judgment there. But as male allies, you know, maybe for her thinking, I don't know who wants to help or how to help. You know, maybe we facilitate that a little bit, whether that's a mentorship program or some structured, you know, training or workshops around coaching skills and things that are needed to have these successful relationships, these cross-gender relationships.
I want to ask about two campaigns. One, I want your feedback on the Me Too movement.
Oh, boy.
And then two, I'd also like to hear about the He for She campaign that you all
For She's great.
And kind of how you see those, aligning.
Oh, boy. Yeah, me too. It's so funny. I get asked about this constantly, and I don't know if I have the PC answer just yet.
We don't need PC here.
No. We had shitty tees and pimp slaps here earlier.
So, I first point, I think it's a really safe place for women to share. With Me Too, it's great that the stories are coming out. As I've communicated with most women, everyone has a story. And I just realized, I personally didn't have a story like that, or I didn't think I did until this came about. And I'm starting to have coffee talk conversations with women and realize, like, oh, yeah, that did happen. Oh, wait. Maybe there was more going on there than I thought. So great that there's a safe place to share. But the second piece of it, and I think we just have to be really mindful of, is the fear that we might be creating for men in the workplace.
Right.
So many organizations I'm talking to are saying, yeah, we got to get that sexual harassment training like going January 1, and it's like, right. Ooh, that's a very reactive. Exactly. A very reactive approach. And, what I hate to happen is what happened 30 years ago with feminism and, men, we locked them in a room and was like, don't do this, or you'll get in trouble. And so what did men do? They kind of like did their own thing and didn't include women in it because they were scared. I don't want that to happen again where we just tell men what not to do. It would be so great to wrap around a positive around that conversation that still is very firm and draws those boundaries on what's appropriate and not appropriate. But what can you do? Not just what you can't do. Let's talk about what you can do. And that's where allyship really has a great
That's a bridge building right there. Mm-hmm. Keep on going. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, you're absolutely right. I see it as kind of a wrapper of, hey, let's not do this. These are the boundaries, the parameters of what a good relationship looks like in the workplace, which apparently we need a lot more clarity about. Locking a door with a button? I did not see that coming.
I am not okay with that.
That's a freak and a half. Let's just call him out for what he is. I mean, that's just ridiculous.
And I watched him like for my professional life.
Oh, it's like so troubling. You feel like your uncle has personally wronged you. It's weird. I agree. And so, like Mario Batali now, did you hear that?
No.
That one also, I don't like that. I don't like that. That's hard for me to adjust. I can't wrap my mind.
So let's go a little bit into a different space. You're seeing the crumbling of this Hollywood edifice, this fictionalized side of Hollywood and media.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, there's a broken trust that's happening in society that the figureheads that were the bastions of moral compass decency. Right.
And we thought we had common values with these people that we saw and reverend in our culture and our society.
Well, we invite them into our homes every day.
They're part of our lives. Yes. Our family.
Yes. Yes.
How we grew up. And so it really shows that, man, we do have some real issues we need to solve. Like, it's not getting better. And that's one of the things people love to tell me. Like, Julie, the statistics are getting better. Women are more included. Right. I remember when I was growing up, this happened. And now that doesn't. Are you sure about that? Because the statistics really aren't that different. And obviously the behaviors that are happening behind closed doors are still not so good.
Not good.
So it does bring some urgency to the issue. It gets it out on the table. It's going to promote accountability. Mm-hmm. I just would hate for it to continue to go in kind of this negative direction.
Well, there's a hyper-reactivity to this entire environment. And what you're doing is kind of standing, kind of like Gandalf, do not pass this space, because it can get into a really dark place, hyper-reaction, and all of a sudden now you have such an accusatory environment, right, that it's going to be very difficult to pull back from. There's going to be a lot of sharp elbows happening, and I think we're smart enough as a society to find our plumb, so to speak, and be able to get that middle ground a lot quicker than history had has shown in the last 30 years, 40 years, right?
Yeah. I mean, we have tools in place now to spread information so much more quickly. And so that should promote positive change more quickly. And a lot of what I think we're seeing is women feeling a lot more comfortable speaking up. And that's so critical. That's one of the strategies in the book that came up loud and clear is male allies didn't speak up for her. They spoke up with her. But she needs to have the courage to speak up, too. And so many people will share with me, you know, this sometimes happens where men will say, well, women just need to speak up more. Well, you know what happens when we do that. We get called not so nice names sometimes. And so, but if a male ally can speak up with us or call out like, wait a second, dude, like
then
not
he,
cool.
Then he is too.
Then, he can be called that too.
You know, we just had an interview on our other show, Edge of the Web, with an author, Kim Scott, that wrote a book, Radical Candor.
Yes.
And I'm seeing a parallel in this space, and it has to do with paying attention to who's receiving the information. It's not just a one-way communication. You've got to know how some radical candor and some true honesty in the workplace is being received, and you've got to be able to adjust and communicate correctly, right? So on top of everything else, it's also being able to know how to listen and know on top of that, know what type of non-conscious cues and clues you're actually broadcasting as a male or a female, right?
Oh, yeah.
So it's more of an awareness of self that's starting to emerge. It's not about a punching bag scenario where he said, she said. It's, okay, there's an issue. There has been an issue, and we're starting to see the transparency, the veil being removed now. Now we need to figure out how best to work together so we're not in that in the fight of our lives here.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad you brought up radical candor, because certainly Kim's work is a testament to this. And a lot of our male allies provide feedback. You know, my male allies tell me stuff all the time that I don't want to hear, but I need to hear. Like, Julie, you're looking a little tired. Are you taking care of yourself? Like, thank you for pointing that out. I'm glad.
Thank
you.
I'm fine.
I'm glad that you did. But sometimes you need to hear those things. And then conversely, women need to have honest conversations with their male allies. And just one quick short story. My friend Shauna here in Indy, she's wonderful. She read the book and helped edit it and all sorts of great stuff. So she reads that chapter and she's like, oh my gosh, my boss interrupts me all the time. And so she chooses to have an honest conversation that she normally would not have. And so they go for a walk together side by side, just like allies do. And they're walking through the park, which is also a good place to have
a good neutral location.
Conversation that might not be might be tough. And she says to him, hey, I got to tell you something. It's not easy for me to share this, but I care about you. And I know we have a good relationship, so I feel like I can just say it. So I'm just going to say it. And he's like, what? Well, you interrupt me. And then there's like 10 seconds of silence. And he turns to her and stops in his tracks. And he's like, I didn't know I did that. And she's like, you do. And just when I'm about to have a good idea, you jump in with your idea. And then I forget about my idea. Or it should feel like we go a different direction than where I feel like I have a lot more value to add that you're not hearing. And he just looked at her wide-eyed and said, you got to let me know when I do that next time. But the beauty of this moment that they had is 3 days later, they're talking and he does it. But instead of her having to call him out,
he
caught it.
And it was like one of those moments. And she said he kept doing that. And after like the fifth time of him doing that, he realized and self-corrected his own behavior.
Retrained himself.
Exactly. But as women, we can't expect men to just know what we want, right? Know what we're thinking, know what the challenges are. We've got to communicate it and have an ask from them. And they take feedback really well. And to your point about being direct, I think being intentional in our conversations is so key to make that happen.
Yeah, and there needs to be trust. There needs to be candor. And again, these positions that people take, and this kind of ruinous empathy that is also a key concept in her book that it just smacked me upside the head. Is that you literally can empathize yourself away from being able to help someone. So more broadly, just for a moment here, empathy in the workplace. Where do you see the level of empathy in American in the American workplace right now? And what's your assessment of improving that? What can be done inside the workspace?
Yeah, empathy is. We recommend these conversations start from a place of empathy. As male allies, I think empathy means recognizing, you know, where she might be coming from, where other amazing women in your life might be coming from. Gather some information, ask them for their story. And I know that's kind of a big step, but for male allies, or what I call male allies on the fringe that just want to be but don't know how, challenge for you.
Yep.
Ask a woman in your life that you care about, tell me your story. Tell me what it's like to be you. Tell me what it's like to be a woman in this country right now. I mean, whatever question you want to ask.
Wow.
And just listen. I've had men do this,
that's
and they're like,
amazing.
The way women respond, like, can you think about if, like, a man, like, you cared about asked you to, oh, my gosh. And it, I think men are like, whoa, that's going to be, like, 10-hour conversation. I'm not, like, having a girlfriend chat.
Right.
But that's not it. Like, and those conversations don't have to be long.
And you can say, keep it under 3 minutes.
Right. I need, like, the 3-minute version. Right.
And just give me the cliff notes of what's going on over there.
Right. I'll accept 5 bullet points. Go.
But what that does is that helps you channel that empathy so much more towards other women in your life, and having a deep curiosity about people that are different than you. When I chose to pursue this line of work, I had to be curious about things I didn't know, people I didn't know what it was like to be them. And man, have I benefited from that. I have gotten so much smarter and so much more empathetic and just a better human being as a result of that curiosity.
You have a great energy.
Oh, thank you.
You do.
Thank you.
You do. I needed to flag it for you that you have a great energy.
I'll empathize with
my
that
inner
moment.
Yoda.
Ooh, look at
and
that.
That's what good male allies do. If you like Star Wars, I did not watch it until a few years ago. I got into it. My husband forced me to watch it. And
good
I,
for you.
As soon as Yoda came on, I was like, oh, I love him. Love him. Because he's like a coach, right? But male allies, that's what, like, be a Yoda. That's what women need, is just be the Yoda. Have the force within themselves. Women have the power within themselves.
Oh, see, that,
I don't
that is
watch
awesome.
Those movies.
Stop it.
I know you give
you
me a compliment.
You need to improvise with me a little bit. You need to embrace the Star Wars.
I don't
Wars
need to
side.
Watch your movies.
Oh, wow. Thanks.
They're really good, Brittany. I mean, honestly, once it gets to Yoda, that was game over for me. I'm like, I love this. Now I understand.
That made it valuable to you.
Yes.
Yoda brought you value. That's funny.
It's not too late.
Star Wars is an epic of this generation. It's like the Homer, the Iliad. I mean, literally, it's all that in a bag of chips.
And women, women are starting to come into it. We've got Rey, who's kind of a badass.
Yeah.
My niece loves Rey.
That's what my daughter was for Halloween.
Oh.
It's so hard to find a strong woman costume.
Or any of her toys and stuff, too.
Yes. Yes. She's got some of those, though. But yeah, I think just thinking about, back to your question about empathy, it's such an important place to get to. And from a woman's perspective, let's please empathize. If there's a few men in the room, I go to women's events all the time, and the few dudes in the room, you can just sense like how tense they are of like, I know I'm different. I know. Let's empathize with them.
Yeah.
Like, they're choosing to be there. Why should we shun them
away?
All
the heads turn around. Yeah. There's a guy.
Yeah.
Man. There's a man. There's a man here.
I sat with a man today at an event. And, Josh, who works right around here, and he's like, yeah, I know I'm different. Like, thanks for being here. I appreciate it. Like, I think you're a male ally. You're helping women out. And he's like, funny that you should mention that. I just, helped out with a women's conference. And, like, just inviting them into the conversation, engage them. They're not the enemy. If a man wants to help, let's
take the help.
Let him help.
Yep. Thanks, don't, Josh. Yeah, thanks for your help, Josh. I don't know you, but I support what you did. I love it. I love everything you're about. All of this is excellent. Good stuff.
I'm glad you're enjoying it.
This is very good stuff.
All right. So to wrap up, maybe some parting thoughts for ladies in the workplace. Albeit it may be a big company, mid-sized, teeny company, tiny agency. What's the first thing?
Yeah. So if you have an employee resource group, a women's group, invite men into it. If they're not already included, male allies should absolutely be extended into that. For women, other things that you can do is if you don't have a mentor, a sponsor, someone that's advocating for your career, who could be that role? And it doesn't have to just be a woman. I used to think that think about what men could also serve that role. Right. A lot of times they're in a better position because they still are the majority of the decision makers in organizations. So, again, think about ways that you can engage male allies. And then the third piece is organizations, right? Think about if you're thinking about sexual harassment training or whatever's on, you know, top of mind for next year. I think more organizations are getting serious about diversity and inclusion right. and having metrics to track that. Think about the positive message you can send in this time of kind of heightened fear around Me Too and sexual harassment. You know, what does good look like? Let's not just tell people what not to do.
Right.
You know, let's think about what to do. So I think women inside organizations, sharing that message with folks in your organization that we want to be about something positive too.
I love it.
Good stuff, Julie.
All right. So you can check out Julie and what she's doing at Pivot Point on the website. If we can throw that up on the screen, nextpivotpoint.com. Twitter is nextpivotpoint. Facebook, nextpivotpoint.
Yep.
Looks
Very
like you
consistent.
Got all the socials.
Nailed it.
nextpivotpoint.com.
We really appreciate and applaud what you're doing in this space yeah. because I think you're the sober one in the room, so to speak.
You guys are drunk?
Maybe literally too. None of your business.
She's triggering me. No, I mean, in this state of society right now, it's so hyper-reactive, and so many people can be bruised by some reckless comments, you know, on all sides of the equation. So, I mean, this middle mm-hmm. ground of finding allies and actually and moving together correctly and, mm-hmm. and with support of each other. I mean, that's the space in which everybody needs to pursue. So thank you so much for doing
thank
that.
You.
Appreciate the book. And
we certainly
recommend all of our audience to pick up the book, One, How Male Allies Support Women and for Gender Equality.
He's getting choked
up.
It's okay to show emotion. You're a man. It's okay.
I'm going
to
cry.
All this empathy talk.
I'm saying. Swimming in it. All right. So for everybody here, Edge of Indy, thank you so much for watching. And certainly lift up the show as well as socials that we're broadcasting at, because we're certainly wanting to lift up all of our guests. And hey, remember to like and review us on Facebook and all the spaces inside of iTunes. If you're really wanting to choose local, then let's help this podcast and this show get out to the masses as best as we can. So we certainly appreciate all the social love and reviews that you can give us. So this is Aaron Sparks as speaking for my lovely cohort here in crime, Brittany Simpson. Thanks so much for watching Edge of Indy, and we will talk to you next week. Take care.
Bye-bye.